You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. This week, we continue our interview in all its shocking detail with researcher and writer Thomas Goodrich, who joins us today to lay bare the truth, the absolute fact that you, yes, you, Mr. and Mrs. Average American, have been and are supporting, funding, and participating in horrific, almost indescribable evil when you support the regime in Washington, when you fail to oppose that regime in every waking moment of your life and with every microwatt of energy in your body. In his latest book, Summer 1945, Thomas Goodrich tells us about the unspeakable horrors committed by the United States against Japan, and in supposed peacetime in an already defeated and prostrate nation against our blood kindred in Germany.
Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
In ancient times, man roamed the earth in a constant state of hunting or being hunted. Introducing Caveman, where cutting-edge science meets ancient super nutrients. Secure your bottle right now at InfoWarsStore.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
When we left off last week, we were discussing the difficulty in finding witnesses to American atrocities in the Pacific theater of World War II. Difficulties primarily due to the fact that all of the witnesses, many of them disarmed prisoners, had been murdered in cold blood as a matter of American policy. We rejoin that discussion now. Listen.
So if there weren't very many survivors and so you couldn't find anyone to talk to, how did you dig up the story of what really happened?
There's enough American accounts. Some of our American soldiers, the Marines and the Army, they talk about this. Now, when they got back to the States, you know, there's a little saying about people asking Uncle Fred about what did you do in World War II, and Uncle Fred just sort of clams up and says nothing. He doesn't say anything, and people assume that it's because of what Uncle Fred saw. But I believe in most cases it's what probably Uncle Fred did, that he doesn't want to talk about it. And mm-hmm. I think when they reached their 30s and 40s, they started growing consciences and they started talking a little more about it or writing it down. Those that didn't kill themselves, that is, or those who didn't, like my biological father, didn't kill themselves by drinking and drugs. And so I got a lot of the testimony from Americans who admitted as much, who said the very same things. Charles Lindbergh, of course, he said the same thing. And people like that. The Japanese themselves, unfortunately, there just wasn't enough survivors. Those who did survive, the few. I don't recall any right now who wrote or said anything about this. So it's secondhand. But coming from the people, the victimizers who actually did this thing, that's powerful enough for me, and that's good enough for a source in my history books. But while this is going on, this island hopping, of course, and later the Okinawa, especially one of the most terrible wars and battles in human history, by the way, Okinawa. While that's going on, of course, we have what's going on in Germany. We've got the Americans occupying and the British occupying Germany in so-called peace. And the things that were going on there at the very same time, these terrible atrocities were being committed in Japan.
Yes.
Now, I do write graphic books. And some people could say I get a charge out of doing that. I don't, because I like sleeping. I like living. I like being happy, just like every other person out there listening right now wants to be that way. But I think if I tell a story, in this case, war stories, if I tell it in all of its graphic horror, I think it's less likely that anybody's going to forget it than if I just pass over lightly and say they were killed or they were tortured. I don't think people are going to remember that. If they remember what I write, I think it's much less likely in the future that they will end up committing these very same crimes or
yes.
putting their name to the very same wars that create these crimes. And that's my hope. Now, maybe it's a lame hope. Maybe it's something that will never happen. But I think it could be happening for all I know right now in the Middle East. Maybe there's people who have read my books and says, this is just like the BS we did in World War II, what they're asking us to do here. So I don't have a good way of putting my finger on that, but that's what I'm going to do until the day I drop, is tell it as it really was.
I think you're doing right, Thomas. I think people need to feel as if they're seeing it themselves to really understand it.
Some of the feedback, Kevin, I've gotten, in fact, a lot of it from Hellstorm, say the very same thing, that they tell me that they never had any idea that this was going on. And some people, many people have said this, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but they tell me that they have to put the book down, that it's sucking out too much of their life from them as they read it. Invariably, they do come back, or a majority of people do come back to it, because they know I'm telling the truth. Rather, they know the people I'm quoting are telling the truth. I should say this. My books have always been first person, you are there, type of approach. In other words, I think it's much, I think the victims themselves can tell a story better than I can. And my job is to hold it together and try to make it, try to write it in a coherent way that people can understand. But when somebody is describing what they have just gone through and they have survived, at least they're still living when the account is being recorded. I don't know an author on earth that can tell it as well as the person who passed through it, whether they're being tortured in the American and Jewish concentration camps after the war by the Jews who basically are there to not get information from them, but simply to fulfill some sadistic fantasy about these people. I'm talking about Germans, men, women, Nazi, non-Nazi. Anyone who speaks German is a candidate for American Jewish torture pens. And anybody who's read Hellstorm knows what I'm talking about here. But I don't, the people who went through this, yes, I do quote quite a few of these people, and the people who saw them. In one case, the war was still going on, but the German Wehrmacht, they staged a counterattack against one area, one town, one city, what I forget exactly. But what they saw, yes, I used their descriptions of what they found when they went back and recaptured an area that the Soviets had conquered for briefly, and what the Jewish commissars had done to roughly 2,500 young women in the Frauenwerk, women's work auxiliary. In other words, these weren't fighting people at all. They were people who worked on roads, who worked on clothing, things like that. What had happened to them? Well, they were tortured to death, every one of them. The Soviets came in, of course, with their commissars telling them what to do. And the most beautiful were taken first. And we're talking girls. We're talking girls age roughly 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, maybe 20. And they were stripped of their clothing. Several at a time, maybe 10 at a time, in a warehouse type of building, with the commissar giving directions to his stooges of what to do, take their clothes off, force it off, and then cut their breasts off.
My God.
Stick things up them that hurt. I can go on. It just gets worse. But it was over relatively quickly what went on with these girls, but swastikas carved into their bellies, on their breasts. If you can imagine the screams.
Sick.
Yes, and yes, it was. But this is what really happened. This account came from not a soldier, or there were no survivors. It came from one girl, a Brazilian, who had volunteered from Brazil to come to Germany and work with these girls, doing good things, you know, not fighting. And she was spared because he wanted her to see this so she could spread the word of what happened, these commissars.
I knew a couple of men who participated on the American side in the World War II in Europe. One of them was a gunner on an American bomber. And he saw exactly what happened on some of those bombing runs, and he would almost never, in fact, he spent most of the time I knew him, which was several years, tearing up if anybody mentioned World War II or his service. He just simply became rigid and teared up. He would not speak of it. And then one time I was told by a family member of his that he had opened up at one time. And the reason he won't speak of it is he would have to relate how he saw innocent people, people in neighborhoods, kids, families, non-combatants being bombed and machine gunned. And he just couldn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. There was another man, and also an American, named Poteet that I knew. And he told me how they would sometimes get German prisoners of war, and they'd take them in, bring them in, commanding officer would tell them, I want you to take those POWs, those German POWs, up to regional headquarters and be back in 15 minutes. And of course, regional headquarters was 250 miles away. What that really meant is take them out in the woods and kill them.
You're right on that score. That's something else I'm not hitting right now, but the Americans were taking no prisoners in the Pacific War, the Japanese. And after they got into Germany, they virtually stopped taking prisoners there as well. Many officers had a no quarter policy. Of course, this isn't written down. It's just understood. And when of course, SS, that was automatic death sentence for the SS to be captured by Americans. And even though some people listening may know of SS officers, men who did survive, these are the rare individuals. The Americans, once they got into Germany, and the war is still going on, by the way, technically anyway, but there was an understanding that that we would take no prisoners, and those we did take, we were going to slap them around till they give us any information they might have, and then they'll be marched to the rear, as you mentioned, as you note, generally a few hundred yards, and that's it. They're dead there. The massacres that occurred, we've heard about, hopefully most of your listeners know a little bit about the Dachau massacre at the end of the war, in which roughly 500 soldiers, German soldiers, were just massacred because the Americans, in their propagandistic indignity at the bodies that were laying there that died from starvation and typhus and tuberculosis and in the boxcars, they saw this. They thought this is proof of the Jewish propaganda about the Germans killing Jews and putting them in railroad cars and things like that. And the Americans saw that, and they never even asked questions. They just started killing the Germans, 301 blow with machine guns. This is going on elsewhere, too. We've heard of the Dachau massacre, but I don't know how many people have heard about SS Mountain Division, 700 who were massacred in one spot. And this is going on 25, 50, 10. This is going on throughout Germany. As the German forces start surrendering and come into American control, I'm ashamed. I grew up, you and I both grew up, I'm sure, loving this country, seeing the flag and feeling proud and voting Republican like our parents did early on. And then to find out that the so-called greatest generation were about as bad a generation as the earth has ever spawned, in their stupid ignorance, in their belief in propaganda, so willingly accepting this type of propaganda, their brothers, their sisters. In many cases, the men who were doing the massacring were Germans themselves.
Yeah,
when I say that I don't know if there was any appreciable difference between what the Americans were doing to the Japanese on these islands, that is, slaughtering them and torturing them. I don't know if there's any difference between that and the war on the Western Front when the Americans got into Germany. And this is after the war's over now, when they started rounding up not just the soldiers, but the civilians. Many of them were massacred. But
you mean that the war is over, the German armed forces effectively don't exist anymore, and the country's prostrate. What do the Allies do? What do the Americans do?
Well, there's no problem now. There's no number one, the journalists traveling with the U.S. forces, they're mere propagandists themselves. They have to be, or they'll be sent back to the United States and never find employment ever again in their life. So they're telling only the good side. They don't mention any of the bad stuff. And the Americans can do virtually anything they want. And with a leader like Eisenhower, a German-hating maniac, a man who had never heard a bullet fired in anger in his life, a man who said to his wife, "God, I hate the Germans," a man who wanted the war to continue because he had not gotten yet enough of the world's greatest bloodbath. He wanted to continue killing more Germans in peace. And so with that filtering down rather quickly to the man holding the weapons, you can imagine what they're going to do also. Not everyone, of course. There are some people like Kurt Vonnegut, people like that, and the men that told you their stories. You and I, no, it would take much more than propaganda for us to do terrible things like many Americans did. But like any other army, there's more than enough sadists willing to live out their fantasies in the U.S. Army. And when it's accepted, or when it's even demanded among your officers, from captain up, or lieutenant up, I should say, then you do it. Some of them are 18 years old, don't have a conscience yet. They haven't developed a soul. And so they just want to get the job done and get the hell out of Europe and go back home and find that girlfriend and buy that car. And so you've got people with a childlike that are willing to do anything they're told, then you have what happened in Germany and Japan, of course. But no, it's a dreadful thing, and I'm thoroughly ashamed. You know, right now, I think it's probably a pretty good time for me to say something. Kevin, I'm getting old. I doubt if I'll ever see this, but I would love to see the day come when all the modern leaders of all the former Allied nations during World War II issue a joint apology to Germany and Germans for what they did during World War II. And I'm going to tell you something, my friend. Someday that is going to happen. And they're also going to build monuments to Germany for what happened to them during World War II. When everyone finally knows it, understands it, then acts upon it, then we're going to have that change in the world. Mm. And that's what you and I are working for every day of our lives, 24/7. Now, that I may not live to see that, but then again, I might.
It's long past time.
It's long overdue. And what I'm saying here, it's not being told in a coherent way, and I apologize. In the books, hopefully, they are told coherently so that anybody listening or anybody reading these books can understand just exactly what we did. And then we would have the guts, the gall, the audacity to call ourselves, our soldiers back then, the greatest generation, and that monstrosity that they fought the good war. Of course, this is all Jewish inventions. That's the way they want it. That's the way they want it to this day. That's why that movie, the name I couldn't come up with, continues. Very similar to the same way that the propaganda back then went.
Well, Americans are still clueless. They're clueless about what happened then, and they're clueless about how they're being used now as a cat's paw for these international Jewish interests who have one hell of a lot of blood on their hands. And the dupes who fall for their propaganda and do their bidding, I'm sorry, they're responsible too, even if they are dupes. They have blood on their hands, and they're clueless. They don't know what's going on.
Here's what I will say to that, Kevin. I get a lot of emails. I get a lot of Skype calls, things like that. I talk with a lot of people. I know you do as well. My thought is a bit different from yours. I think every day more and more people do know what happened. They won't say it because there has not been critical mass yet. Power has not come completely to our side. It's rushing to us with the speed of light. We can't tell right now because we're humans. We're not endowed with telescopic vision. But it is coming with the speed of light, and eventually we will reach critical mass. And these people I'm talking about, that I talk to on a daily basis, they know it, and they will come to our side. You know, weakness is drawn to strength. And when it finally all comes to us, then they will come over. It's a pity they don't act on their own right now, but they will eventually. So I think every day that passes, every day we have the computer, every day that people click that mouse and search for something they've been thinking about, and there it is. That's another person that comes to our side, at least as far as the truth of World War II. And so I'm disappointed, of course, that people just don't rise up on their own. But I believe it's coming, and I'm here to work to make sure that day comes quicker than later. Yeah. That's what keeps us motivated. That's what keeps both you and I going and all of our people. And by the way, I want to add this. Some of the people who have come to me are not just people sitting on a fence, taking in their retirement pay, the Social Security. Some of these people are some of the best and the brightest in their fields. Let me say this. Let me say something. I've said this before, so it's not that original, but I actually had an Academy Award winning director approach me about a film on Hellstorm.
Wow.
This person, it wasn't Mel Gibson either, by the way. I know a lot of people are thinking about him. It was someone else. They didn't do the film, probably because they knew they would never do another film if they did one But it's people like that that do get a hold of me, say, I have read Hellstorm, and it changed their life. It absolutely changed their life. So there are still some really important, powerful people out there that once we, this critical mass is reached, they will be over with both feet, trust me, and it'll be like night and day.
Well, I like your positive attitude, Thomas.
The turnaround, my friend, will be like night and day. It seems so dark and dreary at times, but that day is coming.
You're making me smile.
Our enemy knows it, because you wouldn't, if someone was winning, they wouldn't be doing the stupid things they're doing right now, like censorship, the banning, the threats that are now in the open out there. They simply wouldn't do it. They'd do it like they'd done it in the past, subtly, because now they're waking everybody up with
They're deplatforming too.
Yes, and it's a fear. It's certainly not strength. It's weakness, and we're going to see a hell of a lot more of that. But guess what? We're dealing with it, and we move on, working for that final victory that we're all looking for.
You've been listening to part two of American Evil, an interview with Thomas Goodrich. Be watching Cosmotheist books online at cosmotheistchurch.org. That's Cosmotheist Church, all one word, .org. For the edition of Mr. Goodrich's Summer 1945, the book we've been discussing here today, and other works by this superb truth-telling author, once again, that's cosmotheistchurch.org. Be sure to join us again next week for part three of this important interview. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom for American Dissident Voices. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. The National Alliance is working to educate white men and women around the world as to the nature of the reality we must face, and organizing our people to ensure our survival and advancement. We very much need your help to continue. It is almost impossible in today's environment for those who advocate for our race to have an ordinary source of income. Keep us publishing. Keep us on the air. Keep us advocating for you by sending your contribution to National Alliance, Box 4, Mountain City, Tennessee, 37683, USA. Or help us by visiting natall.com/donate. That's natall.com/donate. Once again, our postal address is Box 4, Mountain City, Tennessee, 37683, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to do right and fear no one.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, 1 beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
I spent almost 2 decades working for the CIA. I've seen up close what so many people don't want to imagine. The frightening reality of radical Islamic terror. Here's the truth no one wants to admit. We will never see a day for the rest of our lives where that threat doesn't hover above our heads. Because the hatred that fuels these jihadists will burn for generations. The question is, will our freedom? If we surrender our privacy rights, our speech rights, our religious rights, and our gun rights, we will not be safer. But we will doom our children and grandchildren, and the billions of people around the world who see America as a beacon of hope, to utter darkness. Our freedom makes us great. Our freedom will keep us safe. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism, fundamentally, is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine. A place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kind of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process. Something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with the conservatives, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just at dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they say, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us, are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker, nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. There's no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of it, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you, we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into power in Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a butt. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces, they just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal. After we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people, and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves, that they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for the for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.